The opinions expressed on Two-Way Traffic are those of Darren Coleman and are for general information purposes only. It does not constitute any legally binding engagement between the podcasters and anyone else. Always check with your advisors to obtain your own tax or investment advice. Welcome to Two-Way Traffic with Darren Coleman of Portage Cross Border Wealth Management. In this series, Darren aims to guide you through the complexities, complications, implications, and most importantly, the advantages of having money and family on both sides of the border. On this episode, Darren talks about leaving Las Vegas or anywhere else in the United States and the nasty exit taxes with John Richardson of citizenshipsolutions.ca.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Two-Way Traffic. I'm Darren Coleman, Senior Vice President with Raymond James in Oakville, Ontario. And today I'm joined by my friend John Richardson from citizenshipsolutions.ca. John, you're a cross-border attorney and someone that gets quoted a lot at industry conferences. So thanks very much for taking some time with us today to go over some of the complexities that people that have some U.S. entanglements might experience. So welcome.
Sure. Looking forward to it.
So you and I are going to cover a few issues today. And I think where we would begin is maybe just beginning to wade into what are some of the complexities that someone who has a green card or is an American citizen, the complexities they would find when they no longer live in the U.S. So we have someone who's been in the United States, comes back to Canada, has a green card, or an American living here that maybe they know they're American, maybe they don't know they're American. Let's just start wading into why is this complicated for these people?
Well, what's complicated for these people is that, you see, most countries, you know, tax on the basis of rational things like, do you live in the country? The United States, yeah, they'll tax you if you live in the country, but they go further. They'll tax you just based on who you happen to be, what you were born as. And if you're a U.S. citizen, or if you're a green card holder, their basic position is, we don't really care if you live in the United States or not. We don't care where you live. We don't even care, for example, if you live in any country. We even have rules for international waters. But by God, you're subject to our regulatory regime, which includes taxes, forms, and penalties. And a regime that treats you far more punitively as basically a punishment for not living in the United States or using non-U.S. financial retirement products, etc. So, you know, this can be a very, very expensive life for people to deal with. It's very unpleasant for most people. And there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, how to best respond to it. A lot of information, some of it not so good, some of it okay, some of it, well, kind of depending on your own situation. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. I mean, American citizens are by far the most complex carbon life forms in the world today.
Well, it's one thing when they're in the United States, you're right, where they're filing U.S. taxes, they have U.S. source income, their employment is there, they've got their complexity. But it really manifests it when they leave the U.S. And do you find that many times people don't have as much awareness of how complicated it is until their eyeballs deep in it? Or do they generally know how complicated it is when they see you?
No. Oh, not at all. I mean, not only do they not have a sense of how complicated it is, many of them don't even have a sense that this exists as a problem. I mean, can you imagine that there are actually people who don't automatically understand that just because you were born in the United States and are therefore a citizen, that no matter where you go, where you live, what you invest in, no matter where it is, that you're still subject to U.S. taxes, forms, and penalties?
No, we encounter this regularly with people that we call them the accidental American, where, you know, they're like, I'm not American. I've lived in Canada my whole life, or I've lived in Ireland or whatever. And I'm like, but you were born in Michigan or you were born in California, but I didn't live there. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, it matters, I think, clearly in how they see themselves, right?
Right. But how the IRS sees them.
Well, it doesn't matter in terms of the view of the IRS. They're subject to all the U.S. tax rules, okay?
Yeah.
But the IRS, to its credit, has come up with various mitigation programs over the years for those who want to renounce. There's the relief procedures for former citizens, which, you know, I think gives them a bit of a break. There's, of course, the streamlined compliance procedures because, you know, I mean, it's hard for anybody to believe this, but, you know, there are actually people who don't realize, you know, they're subject to all these rules before we even get into what the rules are. So I would say that Americans outside the United States are treated far more unjustly. But I would say that there are IRS programs that mitigate that to a certain degree, provided that they agree to, you know, be a good form filer, you know, file your forms.
So let's start with that one. So somebody discovers, they meet you, they meet me, they meet someone that's a cross-border specialist, and they discover to their shock, they're 50 years old or 35 years old, and they're like, I didn't know I had to do all this U.S. compliance because I was born in the States and I don't consider myself American. So there are some programs where people can become compliant. Is it a relatively easy process, or do they need somebody like you to navigate that process with them?
Well, the first thing most of them need is some kind of an emotional counseling program, you know, where they're just stuck in such fear that they don't know what to do. And the reason is this, that, you know, it's, you know, as you know, Darren, you and I live in, you know, one of the three countries in the world that I would consider to be part of the tax axis of evil, Canada, the United States, and France, right? I think would be the big three. But, right. You know, tax compliance is serious business, I would say, in Canada, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, people understand they have to do this. And I think that the rate of tax compliance in Canada is probably very high. And, you know, this is part of people's identity, right? So, you know, like people don't walk around saying, I'm so proud I comply with my tax laws in Canada, but, you know, they feel good about it. Okay. And they see themselves as, you know, honest, compliant with the law types of people. So yeah. The first thing that happens is, what? Right? No, this can't be me, right?
Yeah, because I follow the rules. I'm a good citizen. Yeah.
I mean, how can this be? You know, I mean, can this really be true, right? So this is the first thing. And for some people, you know, particularly a decade ago when there weren't a lot of trailblazers out there, maybe 12 years ago, and people just went into, you know, unbelievable shock. And that was even before they realized how punitive the rules actually were. And the entry point for most of these people is a combination of, well, they should be filing U.S. tax returns, but there's the F-bar, Mr. F-bar, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, this whole, you know, where there's a threat to take, I mean, if read literally, you know, 50% of their assets. Can you imagine?
It's terrifying.
They're not filing form with the criminal division of the IRS, essentially, okay, FinCEN, reporting accounts, their normal accounts in Canada, where they country they live. I mean, nobody can even, I mean, you can't make this up, right? So they're in, you know, they're in this horrible situation. Now, you know, to understand it, maybe you'll remember the name of this movie. There's this great it's The Game, The Game. Okay, listeners should check out the movie The Game by Michael Douglas, where he gets this membership to this sort of, I don't know, it's some weird club. Thing. Into an alternative reality. And it's an amazing movie. And that sort of is what I think a lot of these people go through when they learn about this first. I mean, it's just, you know, sort of a surreal.
But like, it can't be real. It must be made up in some way. Yeah, it's surreal. Actually, that's exactly the right word.
So what they do then, you know, as they check everything they can find online to find somebody who says, well, you know, it's not true. And of course, the only thing anybody ever writes about, okay, are the penalties, right? I mean, nobody ever writes about, you know, like what's really going to happen. The answer is not much. Okay, that's the real answer. You know, but the problem is that that doesn't really sell. Okay, you know, and that doesn't generate calls. So you don't get a lot of cross-border people saying, you know, you have to do all this, but not much will happen. And, you know, if you don't, right. Or to put not so much don't file, but there are ways to solve the problem. Okay. That, you know, so you'll be able to sidestep the penalties. So, you know, they go completely out of their minds. I mean, I think that's the first thing that happens to a lot of people. And I would add also that, you know, one of the things I've learned over the years. Okay. So, you know, when I work with people, basically, I'm not really very interested in taxes and stuff like that. Okay. I mean, that's just sort of mundane stuff, you know? What I'm interested in, is how to get their life back in a place where they're happy. Okay. You know, to get them to sort of, you know, the next stage, put this all behind them. And, you know, you really have to understand what kind of person they are. The more intellectual dexterity the person has, the more likely they're going to try to actually understand these rules, which are impossible to understand.
That's the wrong road, right?
Well, my lawyer clients over the years have been by far the most difficult because I think they can understand and they can't, right? You know, and those people I think are especially prone, you know, to severe, you know, meltdowns. And a second group that's prone to severe meltdowns, this is why, you know, you got to know what's going on in people's lives, right? And listen carefully. Are they coming off a serious illness? Have they been through a relationship breakup or divorce in the last year or two, right? All of these things that, stabilize their lives to begin with, and then they get hit with this, you know, oh my God. So, you know, it's important to understand what's going on in these people's lives, you know, to kind of, you know, get this sorted out. Now, I would say this, to get it sorted out, for some people, it's, oh, all right, I'll start filing U.S. tax returns, and they do. Now, very often those people a few years later call and say, well, you know, I tried filing the U.S. tax returns, and it really didn't go very well. You know, I'm having trouble doing it. It's too expensive. I found out the U.S. tax system is destroying me, so I think I'll renounce, right? And then there's other people who say, you know, there aren't many like this, but I've heard this occasionally. It's so wonderful that I've learned that I'm a U.S. citizen and I have these tax filing responsibilities because I really come to see this as sort of an insurance policy, you know, that I can always go and live in the United States. And, you know, I mean, this is kind of a free in Canada. Well, you can go there for a number of months a year anyway. So people are different. Darren, people are different. Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting point you make, because sometimes these issues don't show up until someone's gone through something, right? So we've had people that didn't realize that they had an American obligation until they sold a property. And like, wait a minute, that's taxable. It wasn't taxable as a Canadian. How come I'm paying, but my spouse isn't? What's that about? Or they've gone through a divorce breakup. Or in the green card holder case, they've lost their job, for example. So they worked in the United States. They've got a green card. Now they've got to come back to Canada. And they don't associate themselves as American, but they've got this green card thing. So do I just throw it out? Do I mail it to somebody? Do I throw it at the guys across the border? Like, what do I do with that? And that has obligations with it.
If they've had that green card, it's a little bit of an oversimplification. But nevertheless, if they've had the green card for the last 8 years, you know, if they get rid of that, they're going to be subject to the very punitive U.S. exit taxes.
So let's talk a bit about that. Like when we talk about the exit taxes or that person that says, look, I don't identify as American, even though I was born there, and I don't have any emotional ties. How do I get rid of this? How do I just sever all these ties to my American tax reporting? Is it as easy as saying I'm done or I won't file tax returns anymore?
Well, no. I mean, you know, if the issue that you're concerned with is the law requiring you to do it, no. Well, you have to either relinquish your U.S. citizenship, and relinquish is a broad term that would include renunciation. Okay. In the law, there's only relinquishment. Renunciation is one kind of relinquishment.
Right.
Okay. I think there's this very odd, you know, out there on the internet, renounce versus relinquish sort of thing. I mean, you know, that's completely wrong. The law talks about relinquishment, and renunciation is one example of that. You know, and that's handled under the immigration laws, basically. And, you know, you just pay them some money. You know, I mean, the one principle that I think all people need to understand is that one never leaves the land of the free for free. Okay. You know, that does not happen.
Free means different things in different contexts, doesn't it? Yeah.
It certainly does. So, you know, American citizens can relinquish, which usually means renunciation. Green card holders can, well, they have more options, and their situations are much more interesting, I find, you know, from a legal point of view. They can, of course, say, I'm handing the green card back. And that means filing a form that's, if anybody's interested, it's an I-407. By the way, that's free. That part is free. Okay, interestingly. Okay. Or they can use what's called a treaty tie break provision, which treaty residency tiebreak provisions are provisions that are used when somebody is actually a tax resident of two countries at once, both Canada and the United States. And green card holders can move back to Canada and, you know, under the treaty, become only a Canadian tax resident, even though they still have the green card. But that's, you know, that's a gross oversimplification. But, you know, those are the roots. Now, notice that neither of those things talks about taxation at all. But you see, not only, you know, in understanding this, so one principle is, you know, you never leave the land with the free for free. I think a second principle might mean everything in the United States is taxable. Everything. You want to not be a U.S. citizen anymore? You want to relinquish? You're going to pay a tax usually, okay? Right. You know, want to get rid of that green card? You may very well be paying a tax, right? You know, et cetera. So then you kind of have to look at, well, what happens? Do they have to pay a tax to do that? And, you know, the way the laws are written since June 16th, 2008, the United States has, you know, what I think can be objectively described in relation to the rules in other countries, extremely punitive exit taxes, right? To the point where, let's say we have a U.S. citizen, say, you know, I always use this example because it's easy to visualize. I went to the University of Toronto, you know, well back in the last century, but, you know, they have professors there who have U.S. citizenship, right? And, you know, these U of T pensions, they're not bad. I mean, you know, they can be worth $1.5 million to $2 million. But here's the thing, okay? If the net worth of the person is over $2 million, right? I mean, that's a sufficient condition for being subject to the exit tax, right? If they want to renounce. Now, let's just take a cash poor University of Toronto professor, wears the same tweed sports coat every day with mothball holes in it, you know, this sort of stuff, right?
This is not Jordan Peterson we're talking about. We're talking about someone of average means.
Absolutely. But 30 years ago, he or she bought a house with their spouse in downtown Toronto that, you know, might be worth $1 million. 35 years of teaching it, you know, they've got another there. I mean, they're clearly worth over $2 million. Now, the way this exit tax works, you know, not only the thing that's unique about the U.S. exit tax rules is they go directly after pensions. Okay. Canada's don't. Okay. Interesting.
Right.
By the way, Canada pioneered this concept, by the way. Okay. In 1996, but that's a different story. So not only does the United States go after their pensions, but if it's not a U.S. pension, they go after it even harder. Now let's just pause for a minute. Okay.
That's interesting.
No, not only is it interesting, it's outright dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous. So one of the things, Darren, you need to be asking, you know, after you get through, well, what's happening in your life? How's your health? Had a divorce lately? Anybody in your family die? Things generally good? Okay. Then the next question you might ask them is, so tell me, have you got any pensions, any Canadian pensions? Okay, because if so, and if they want to get rid of their U.S. citizenship, are you ready for this? The present, the pension is deemed to be distributed. Okay, so let's just
like
take
in
our
one shot on that day.
Shot, boom. No, the day before you were now. Why?
So here's your $1.7 million that you thought you collect over the course of your life. We're going to say it's all paid today. Okay, got it.
All paid out right now as one U.S. taxable event. And the amount that's taxed is the amount of that present value less what your contributions were. So, you know, the reason people go to law school, Darren, is because they can't do math. So I'll keep this really simple, okay? So let's say at one point...
Because, by the way, that's the gross value. They don't deduct the taxes that would be paid for that, do they?
So $1.7 million, let's say it's been $700,000. So that's $1 million income inclusion on something you never got. So, I don't know, what are we looking at? $300,000 conservatively? And you don't even get a credit for that in Canada when you get the stuff out later.
Right. So you're going to pay the tax to the U.S. at no corresponding benefit on the Canadian side. This is a really expensive idea.
It can be. Okay. So this is, I think, very important. The people confuse the simplicity of the renunciation. Ah, it's spring. I think I'll renounce my U.S. citizenship.
or I don't like who might win the U.S. election. Either way, I'm coming back to Canada, or I don't want to be bothered with these guns. Yeah.
That issue. They may, you know, make noise, but they don't. But yet they really do have to understand, you know, what the possible tax implications of this are. Now, this doesn't apply to everybody, but the example I'm giving you is so commonplace. You know, just somebody who has a teacher's pension and owns a house in Toronto. I mean, I see this all the time. I think that what they need to do is live by the Bank of Nova Scotia motto, slogan, you're richer than you think. Okay? All U.S. citizens, from the point of view of getting rid of U.S. citizenship, are probably a lot richer than they think.
It's interesting because of the math of this. We've actually had some clients that instead of relinquishing, decided they would get U.S. citizenship. It turned out to be a cheaper option to go a little further into the deep end.
If they're green card holders. Yeah. So that's always a discussion that you want to have with people, right? Is, you know, so you're, what's typical here is I see this all the time. You know, somebody who went to, I mean, let's just keep the same professor theme for a minute here. There's tons of Canadians who are professors at U.S. universities, right? So let's say you go to the University of California. You have the same value pension. Now, the first thing that's interesting, by the way, in the context of expatriation, which in the green card would be getting rid of a green card, is that because it's a U.S. pension, you know how I explained they confiscated it was the Canadian pension?
Yes, on the Canadian side, right.
You can keep it if it's a U.S. one.
A little unfair, but
well, you know, I mean, if it were unfair, it'd be, you know, U.S. taxation, right? Okay, but so if it's a University of California pension, for example, because it's a U.S., they get to keep it. They get to keep theirs. In other words, the one that was accumulated while they're living in the United States, they get to keep. The one that was accumulated when they're not living in the United States gets confiscated. So, you know, they can keep the pension. You know, what happens is when I say keep it, what I mean is that, you know, it's taxed as it's distributed. Now, again, for any listeners, I'm giving you the result. I'm not giving you all things you have to do.
All the considerations.
Yeah, little odds and ends. So, you know, you need to get help on this for sure. Again, now this applies, by the way, only for people who are covered expatriates. But let's just work with the 2 million net worth figure because you know, I'm sure a lot of your clients are, you know, they may feel cash. They probably are cash poor, but they probably have 2 million of assets. Because what do you need these days? A house in Toronto and a pension, you know, and you're pretty much there, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very, very interesting how incredibly punitively these rules are applied to U.S. citizens and I suppose, U.S. citizens, you know, living outside the United States. I mean, you know, there's nothing quite like it. So, you know, there you go. Now, one way of avoiding it for a green card holder, right, would be to become an American citizen.
Yeah, they said it was so expensive to get disentangled. It just made more sense for me to go all in and then just be a U.S. citizen and not worry about my green card expiring or whatever. And then they just navigated their lives a little bit differently. So we've seen a few clients that have chosen to go. They started off saying, I'm going to renounce and then decide I'm going to become a citizen.
It's kicking the can down the road. I mean, that's a discussion you have to have with people. Yeah. I mean, if you're a green card holder, you know, and you want to move back to Canada sort of thing, yeah, you can get yourself out of the problem by becoming a U.S. citizen.
And then you just trade one set of problems for another set of problems.
That's exactly right. You know, as long as you're a U.S. person, citizen or green card holder, I think that's the definition of a U.S. citizen or green card holder, somebody who always has problems. I mean, isn't that really it?
That's very true. It's very true. Well, actually, while we're on that topic, let's just change gears a little bit because we talked with a person that, you know, has become aware that they're either U.S. citizen or they know they have a green card they want to relinquish. But there's situations with snowbirds, for example, that can suddenly develop a U.S. tax exposure without even realizing it just by staying too long. So what are some of the things that people trip over? That Canadian citizen, not born in the United States, didn't work in the United States, but hang on, now I got to file U.S. taxes or they somehow have their grip on me? How did that happen?
Yeah. Okay. I think that the root of most of this is confusing immigration rules with tax rules. Okay.
Right.
As I understand this, and actually I know this because I had to reconfirm for somebody just yesterday. In terms of being allowed to enter the United States as a Canadian and just kind of visit, you know, you can enter for up to 6 months, okay? And, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm not personally a fan of Florida, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of Canadians who seem to like it in Florida. I think Prime Minister Mulroney died in Florida, in fact.
He did, indeed. He did, indeed.
So there's a lot of Canadians who will go down there. Now, you know, U.S. tax residency is, of course, a problem, and it's a big enough problem that, you know, people should try to avoid it if possible. Now, I know you've had this. I looked at some of your earlier podcasts with people, and I know that this has come up before, so I want to add a little bit, you know, to what I've heard people say here, okay? Basically, they're going to become a U.S. tax resident if they trigger what's called a substantial presence test. Now, what I keep hearing people say generally is, well, if you're there for 183 days or something, and that is true, that would do it. But it's more complicated.
Beginning of how complicated it gets, right?
Yeah, okay. You can be a U.S. tax resident if you're there for a lot less than 183 days, because what they do is they actually take a weighted average over a three-year period, okay?
Right.
So the way it works is I don't even think I have to look this up, but the problem will be in the arithmetic, right? But the way it works is that you first of all, you have to be in the U.S. for more than 31 days, okay? But, you know, for right. Snowbird, the tension usually, right? Okay, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's say that in the current year, you're in the United States for 120 days, okay? So you start with that number. Then you're going to take a third of the days you're in the United States in the immediately prior year. So let's say that that's another 120 days, right? So 120 plus 40, now we're at 160, right?
Right.
Now we're going to go back to the previous year, and we're going to take one-sixth. Okay, one-sixth. So if you're in that, you're for 120 days. Well, if a third is 40, a sixth would be 20, right? So now we're adding 120 for the first year, 40 for the second, 20 for the third year. Man, I didn't have to go to law. Well, did I? Okay. There we are, you know, at 180 days, which is just below it, which is where you get the rule of thumb that, you know, if you don't stay there more than 120 days in any given year, you're probably safe. Okay.
But if you're longer than that, you should get an app on your phone that you can enter when you went in, departed. We've seen some clients have that so that they know exactly when they're in danger or not.
That's right. You know, I mean, I hear time after time that the, you know, the border people are now, you know, this information is relatively easily accessible. I mean, if somebody wanted access, I mean, I don't think people need to be paranoid and worry about this. But the point is that if somebody wanted to come after you, they probably could get the information. Okay, now, so let's say that it was 123 days in each of the years. That would push you, I think, over. Well, clearly that would put you over the 183, right?
Yeah.
Then the question becomes, you know, are you or are you not going to be a U.S.? Is there any defense to this? Is there any defense mm-hmm. to it? And there is a defense to it, okay, which is called the closer connection rule, okay? Now, the closer connection rule, by the way, this is just a very broad overview. Get help.
Right. None of this is legal advice. It's just two guys talking right now.
You don't do this without having the statute in front of you, but I'm making a special exception for you here, Darren. Okay.
Thank you.
So basically, if you're able to demonstrate that really, you know, your center of gravity is Canada, you can, because of this closer connection exemption, not be a U.S. tax resident. Okay. But if you've been there just simply too long, which I think the answer is more than 183 days in a year, more than 183 days, then that's it. You're stuck. Right. You're definitely a U.S. tax. And so what do you do then? There's still hope for you.
Okay.
Or that if you really live in Canada, okay, you're also a tax resident of Canada. So here we are. Two of the three members of the tax axis of evil, Canada and the United States, imagine this, are simultaneously claiming that you're subject to their tax rules. I mean, that, for listeners, is not a pleasant thing. Make a note of it, okay?
No. Right.
So then what you do in the U.S.-Canada tax treaty, there's something called a tax treaty tiebreak provision, where if you are a tax resident of both countries, they go through a series of tests, with a goal to assigning tax residency to one of the countries. Now, again, you have to look at this stuff. I mean, it's totally, a bad idea to just pass what I'm doing off right now as tax advice off the top of my head, right? But basically, the first test is permanent home. So if you have a permanent home in Canada but not in the United States, that should be the end of the matter. Hint, one of the reasons why I do not encourage people to buy homes in Florida, okay? And there are other reasons for it, which I'll get to in a minute.
But that's one, because that's now a permanent home you have access to.
That's right. Okay. So now let's say, though, you have a permanent home in both Canada and the United States. Then they start looking at, what I would paraphrase as being sort of the center of gravity of your life. Where's your business, all this sort of stuff. And usually that's enough, particularly if you arrive in Florida with Ontario plated cars, Ontario license plate, this sort of stuff, right? And then, if it still hasn't been decided, interestingly, the final determinant, the tiebreaker, is citizenship, right? So if all other things being equal, then they look to your citizenship. So if you're a Canadian citizen and not a U.S. citizen, the Canadian would trump it, making you a tax resident of Canada, which means that from a U.S. tax perspective, you're not taxed on your worldwide income. You're taxed only on your U.S. source income, which is a relief for a lot of people, okay? But, the IRS has rules about reporting, right? There are certain reporting requirements that you can't. You know what? I think I've said enough on that to make the point, okay, which is really be careful and make sure you have an advisor who actually knows where to find in the Internal Revenue Code what these rules are.
Because none of them are free to fight, right? If they come at you for a conversation, it's going to cost money.
In my life, I have never seen a small citizenship or immigration problem. Okay, never. They don't exist. All right, because if something's a citizenship problem, you can be sure that they're either trying to deny you entry to a country or deport you. Okay, one of the two. Tax problems are usually not as severe because usually your liberty is not at stake, but they tend to be more expensive to deal with. The easiest thing that people to do is this, okay? Don't stay in the U.S. more than, I think, 120 days a year. Like, why would you want to anyway? I mean, that's like, what is that, 4 months or something? Isn't that enough?
Yeah.
I mean, don't do that. I'm not a fan of investing in real estate in the United States for a number of reasons. One is related to the whole tax residency thing that I just described to you, but that's not the main one. The main one is that, sooner or later people die, okay? And, to die with real estate and property in the United States, it's going to invite more lawyers in your life, right? And, and cost, stuff like that. And, do you like lawyers, Darren?
Well, you're one, so I like you. So there's one. I like Shlomi. I know a few lawyers that I like, yeah. But this idea about the complexity with an estate, with a property, yeah, we've talked about that with a few other people. That's one that I think most people who've already got a property don't realize how complicated that is. So we'll not touch that subject for today, but that's definitely something that we've tackled in a couple of other podcasts and we'll keep tackling because it's again, like most of this stuff, it's wildly more complicated than the average person thinks it is. And your point at the beginning of don't try to understand it, because it doesn't often make sense. You really don't have to agree with anything. You just have to agree to it. So just understand what the rules are, how they apply to you, and find someone to guide you through them is probably the best you can do, right?
Advisor whose judgment you generally trust, okay? Because I consider myself to be a permanent student of this stuff, okay? Honestly, a student of, and, look, I know more about this than a lot of people in the world do, okay?
You do. That's why you're on this.
There's this idea that, you can look up the answer to this stuff online. Sometimes you can, but often you can't, and you don't have the ability to determine which, under which circumstances you can.
Sure, because there's exclusions to everything. There's exceptions to all kinds of things. It applies here, but not here. The rules are changing with every year, every budget, every administration. Something moves. So even if you think you know where the chess pieces are, it may have moved, or that actually you're playing checkers, Mr. Coley, not playing chess. So you're playing the wrong game. So yeah, we do see this complexity with people.
There was this great Star Trek episode when, William Shatner, the earlier ones.
Kirk, yep.
Look up the Star Trek episode. It's called Fishbin or something, right? Where they land somewhere and they invent this game called Fishbin. It reminds me of the Internal Revenue Code, right? Where they're saying, well, you know, if you have, this is a card game, you know, if you have, you know, two clubs, that's a fishbin, unless it's Thursday, in which case it's not, exception, 11 a.m., then it is, right? I mean, you know, it's more like that. And, you know, the problem is, like, the U.S. tax laws, right? It's like a website out of the 1990s that was, you know, that has just been tweaked here and there. I mean, it's just an unbelievable mess. It can be understood by basically nobody, without considerable time. And, you know, I mean, I think generally people should try to stay away from it. And by the way, do not for a minute infer from what I'm saying that I think Canada is necessarily easier. Okay, it is not.
Well, it's just someone's gotten wrapped up in both systems. So neither one is great. Both together are disastrously complicated.
I mean, can you imagine somebody, you know, at their celebration of life, you know, and somebody's making a speech about them and says, well, you know, this was such a great person. He spent the last 10 years of his life trying to understand the U.S. tax system. I mean, you know, my point is that
you did not die with happiness.
It's a total waste of time. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. Right. But somebody like you has to help somebody figure it out, because these problems don't go away. And as we often find people when they arrive with us, we sometimes have to be the, and so do you, the bearer of bad news of this is how complicated it is. But better to solve it than to die with the problems, because that just gets even more expensive for estates. But that's a whole other dialogue.
Well, you know, I think that this is, I kind of see this as a quality of life issue. Okay. And, you know, ever since all this stuff started, and, you know, the COVID and just, you know, all these changes in the world. I mean, look at how taxation is changing, vacant home taxes and, you know, all this.
Well, they've all got to get their money from somewhere because they spent so much.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, it's like they're just looking for anything. And the more complex, the better, because I don't know. I mean, it's like I was reading about this, you know, Canada's new reporting for these bear trusts, right?
Complete mess this is.
Yeah. What I found interesting about it, though, was that, you know, I mean, it's not particularly complicated, but it's going to cost people, I don't know, $500 to $1,000 easily to get one of these retirements.
Just because you have a joint account with your dad.
Yeah. And then you got like Canada's vacant home tax. I mean, you know, I think to be charged $500 to $1,000 to complete that form in anything but the simplest situation is probably a money loser for a tax professional.
Yep.
But I mean, look at, you know, the position that these crazy laws put people in, right? And then, of course, the penalty, right? Just, you know, absolutely absurd. So here's the key point, okay? That my new definition of wealth and life, all right, is as follows. To be happy living on very little, okay? To be happy living on very little, okay? You want an old car that has no market value and that starts every day. That's the only car that has any real value in the world. You want to avoid, if possible, you know, what are called entities, things like corporations, trusts. You don't want to bring these things into the world because, you know, you incorporate a company or create a trust. Guess what you need? A trusted advisor, you know, that you're going to have to talk to about this at $500 an hour. And then you're going to have to file returns. And, you know, and it becomes part of the discussion with the financial planner. Well, you know, do you have a Canadian controlled private corporation? Really? Who are the shareholders? You know, I mean, all of this.
John, we're going to have to do a new podcast about how to become homeless with John Richardson. That's what we're going to have to do.
Well, I'll tell you something. So I get up really early and I had a meeting. You know, I work with people all over the world. So I actually had a meeting with somebody at 6:30 this morning. And I'm walking down the street and I walk by this fancy condo. Okay. And I look inside and they obviously didn't have 24-hour security. And there's this homeless person who was asleep. You know, when you walk into these things, they usually have a nice entrance and a couch and everything, you know, for visitors.
Oh, the lobby. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he was asleep in the lobby. And I thought, you know, how cool is that? I mean, he looks really happy. I mean, he, you know, he's, you know, probably $2,000 a month maintenance fees for this thing. And there he is sleeping for free.
Just enjoying it, right? If he could figure out how to get up to the pool, he's in great shape.
He didn't seem to me to be overly bothered. And I bet you he doesn't file a tax return.
I bet you he doesn't. So not that we're advocating homelessness as our strategy here at Coleman Wealth. We do other things here. We're going to try and give you complexity.
No, but I think I would advocate simplicity. Okay. I think that things that are complicated and costly are bad. I think that things that are done only to save taxes without any, you know, other investment benefit are probably bad.
Agreed.
I think that creating Canadian-controlled private corporations for, you know, no reason is bad, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, you know, what's that saying? Simplicity is virtue. Simplicity and virtue is happiness. Therefore, those who understand syllogistic logic, simplicity is happiness. Yes?
There you go. Perfect. So we're going to end on that note, John, but we help people find simplicity through their complexity. And we're going to try to help them avoid homelessness, despite its attraction in your neighborhood.
Exactly. Disregard the complexity, embrace the simplicity, and understand the complexity of being a U.S. citizen or green card holder.
All right. Well, with that, John, thank you very much. You've helped us with some clients in the past. And by the way, your website does have, despite you said about going to the internet, your site has a lot of material for people that find themselves tangled up a little bit. So they can start by reviewing some of your material.
Hundreds of blog posts on these issues, hundreds and hundreds. You know, I would just wake up and think, oh my God, I just really need to get this out.
So they can either read them all or they can just book a consultation with you and get the shortcut, yeah. Get simplicity.
One other thing I want to throw in, this just popped into my head. I think we may have talked about this at one point, but those who are dual citizens in Canada, all right, when you fly back into Canada, make sure you're flying in on a Canadian passport.
Well, we did talk. You had a client that called you. We talked about this about a week ago. They were flying on one passport, and it's now the airlines that are enforcing some of these rules. So, yeah, just quickly take us through that. That's a really good pro tip.
You know, about 5 or 6 years ago, I had a middle of the night call on that as well. So remember, okay, that if you're a Canadian citizen, dual citizen, okay, fly back on the Canadian passport and permanent residence of Canada, make sure you fly in on the permanent resident card. Otherwise, you know, what you do is you fly to Buffalo and drive across the border or something. But, you know, it's the airline thing that's a problem.
No, but that's important. Be mindful of what credentials you've got, right? And which one you're supposed to have.
Well, you know, dual citizenship can be complicated.
Okay, back to simplicity. All right, John, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. And for those of you listening, if this stuff tangles you up, give us a call, give John a call. Definitely visit his website. Lots of material there. So, John, thank you for your time. And listeners, thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you. Keep it simple.
This has been Two-Way Traffic with Darren Coleman of Portage Cross Border Wealth Management. Thanks for watching and listening. If you have any questions or comments or ideas for new episodes, send us an email at twowaypodcast@gmail.com. And you can find the Two-Way Traffic Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. This series is a production of the Acme Podcasting Company.
On behalf of the Two-Way Traffic Podcast and Portage Wealth of Raymond James, thank you for listening to this conversation. This podcast has been prepared by and expressed the opinions of Darren Coleman and his guests and are not necessarily the opinions of Raymond James Limited. Statistics, data, and other information presented are from sources Raymond James believes to be reliable, but their accuracy cannot be guaranteed. This podcast is for information purposes only and is not construed as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of securities. Investors considering any investment should consult with their investment advisor to ensure that it is suitable for the investor's circumstances and risk tolerance before making any investment decision. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Information provided in this podcast is general in nature and should not be construed as providing legal, accounting, and/or tax advice. Should viewers have any specific questions or issues in these areas, please consult your legal, tax, and/or accounting advisor. Raymond James Limited is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund. Raymond James USA Limited is a member of FINRA and SIPC. Raymond James Limited and Raymond James USA Limited financial advisors may only transact businesses in provinces and/or states where they're registered.